I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right. Enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
Did I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
You're telling me I'm wrong?
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
No.
You want to start a show out with deception? I am not in Canton Studios, Living Bread, home of Mother Angelica. I am in St. Patrick Parish here in North Platte, Nebraska. Last night I spoke here, logic of being Catholic. Good Lord permitting, tonight, heading over to Hastings. Talk title will be Men, Women, excuse me for the gender assuming, and Marriage. We'll talk about that in Hastings tonight. So if you haven't signed up yet, I'm getting a chance here. My producer man, Andrew Kruchek, called it a whirlwind tour. All I know is I'm eating about every 8 minutes. It's the greatest part. I found out the Google Maps thing. You can put in restaurants near me. And I can just, like today I was eating. And I eat at fancy places too. Oh yeah, I went to Denny's this morning. Like Denny's. Get those pancakes that are kind of, well, they're not buttermilk. They're, I don't know what they're, tofu-y or something like that. Anyway, but they're supposed to be healthier for you, so I got that. And right now, Father Sorensen has allowed us to use one of the side rooms here in the parish, one of the meeting rooms, so we are broadcasting from here. The number to get on to the program. Yesterday was very quiet. There are multiple reasons why people call. Oh, I did, huh? So we're having some problems here. Oh, my gosh, we are having little technical drops here. It was quiet, and I thought it was because here I'm in Nebraska. People thought I could only call if I'm in Nebraska. No, you can call from anywhere. If you're listening, absolutely no problem whatsoever. Main reasons people call, probably the most common reason, is some situation in their life and their circumstances that they want to bounce off. I mean, they're not doing therapy here. Not going to get a diagnosis, and I certainly am not going to intrude and insert myself when you're seeing another therapist. No, that's not allowed. But we can educate, give you some ideas. Another reason people call, probably second most common, is offer some insights and thoughts for someone else. That is maybe a response to something somebody said. I've got some emails that have come in and more or less said, hey, here's a couple ideas for your callers. And they always say, can you get a hold of those callers? No, we can't. When folks call, we can't chase them. We don't even know what their number is. But I can save it for next time, so that helps. And then, sometimes people disagree with me. I know that's hard to believe, and the way I look at it, if they want to be wrong, that's their prerogative. So call in for any reasons. 877-573-7825 is the number. Hold on a second. I want to plug my phone in. Okay, just did. Now, one of the problems here is we do not have a studio clock, so I've got to kind of go by my phone and see what time it says. I used to do an awful lot of presentations to school districts. I consulted to the schools for about 12 years in Columbiana County. I think over 10 or 11 school districts. And I got a chance to talk to a lot of them. I used to work for the SBH, Severe Behavior Handicapped. And I think that name has changed by now. I think it's a law in education. You have to change the letters every 3 years. Because what happens is the letters have a pejorative tinge, and they say, oh, gee, we don't want to do that, so we got to change it. Even when I was there, it changed a number of times. Emotionally disturbed, severely emotionally disturbed, severe behavior handicapped. I don't know what it is now. I haven't been in the schools for a while. But I used to do an awful lot of school in services, and there were programs set up for teachers that would be all-day conferences, and I would get asked to come in, talk with the teachers. And there was one fella who was a psychologist, very successful. He had a practice with a lot of folks associated with him. He'd bring me in a number of times. Question came up in one of the Q&As about my suggestion that writing an essay on what you did wrong. Oh, geez, excuse me. Am I allowed to use the word wrong? What you did inappropriate? Unacceptable. What might be a better option? No, what you did wrong. What you can change about it. What might be a better way to do it. I like essays. Essays are conscience on paper. He took me aside after one of the conferences. And he scolded me. Well, you know, psychologists don't scold people. They kind of sort of soft pedal it. But he corrected me. Do not use writing. And then he used the word for punishment. See, always you gotta watch your language here. Didn't say a consequence. Didn't say as a result. No, a punishment. So given that, I ignored him for multiple reasons. First of all, because, and by the way, this is not an uncommon attitude, mindset, conclusion toward writing. A lot of people say that. I was in a conference in Canada. Canada's really quick to say stuff like that, at least my minimal experience. And that's a horrible generalization. But that said, I did get that a couple of times when I was up in Canada. Don't use writing. We want children to love writing. We want children to be attracted to writing. We want children to see writing as a beautiful thing. And if it's paired with some kind of forced discipline, well, by Pavlovian conditioning, it's just going to completely turn them off. First of all, that's a nice little theory on paper, and it has no research support whatsoever. If you ask writers, how do you get better at writing? They'll tell you. Practice. Got to make yourself. This one high-profile writer was giving a conference on writing, and all these budding young writers showed up. He gets up on stage, gets behind the podium, and he introduces the whole topic with this. What are you doing here? You want to be better writers? Go back home and write. Practice. We practice everything else. But here's the problem. How many kids are going to actually write once they get past 8, 9, 10 years of age, when little girls love to write and have these little stories and everything that they give to mommy and daddy because they said, I wrote this, and they're all excited. Sam, you stay there. I'll get to you. They kind of fade out of that. I used this example with teachers once. Somebody raised this issue. They said, no, I teach grammar and literature and composition, and I really don't think you should use my curricula, my profession, my teaching as discipline. Oh, that's funny. George left just because I mentioned his name. Wow. Well, leave him there. I'll talk to it. Oh, I'm sorry. Sam. Sam left. And I asked her this. I said, the beginning of the year, do you tell your students, I don't want to force anybody to write. So what I would like to do is just make writing in this class optional. I don't want to hold the threat of a bad grade over you. That's compulsion. It's force. So what I want to do is just simply leave it open. If you wish to write, please write. And if you don't, then don't. Won't affect your grade whatsoever. She didn't answer. She didn't say a thing. She just looked at me like, that's dumb. I go, yes, I didn't want to say it. Yeah, it is. Because you're compelling them to write. You have assignments. If they don't turn those assignments in, they get a bad grade. That's compulsion. What are you doing? Furthermore, kids who write essays, if you say, well, they're being forced to write. Well, they're also putting their conscience on paper. They're also being forced to think about When you write something, you have to think about it. I know I do. When I write a book, I got to think about what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it. And my thoughts coalesce. Most people think in fragments. They don't think in narrative sentences. You put it down on paper. There's no research support anywhere that says if a kid has to write an essay over his conduct, that somehow, some way, he's going to be turned off toward writing for the rest of his life. Those of you with preschoolers, you send him to a corner? Don't do that. No, he's going to have aversive memories of the corner. He'll never go into a room. He'll never go near a corner. He'll stay right in the middle of the room. You make him apologize? Don't do that. He'll grow up and he'll be married and he'll be a spouse who never apologizes because he was forced to apologize. Don't make him go to church if he doesn't want to go to church, because then you're going to turn him off towards church. That's what you're going to do, because he's going to accuse you of that. Don't make him eat vegetables. He's going to hate vegetables. And when he grows up, he's never going to touch another vegetable again. You see what happens with that kind of thinking? You can't have a child do anything that would be good for them if they're resistant to it, because ultimately that's quote-unquote a punishment or a force, and it'll turn them off. Yeah, some things sound really smart, but they're really dumb, and that's one of them. That if a child is made to write, that will mean he'll never write again. And by the way, how many of you like to write? How many of you say, I can't wait to sit down and put all my thoughts on paper and edit it and re-edit it and work it? My first books took a lot longer to write than these later ones. Why? Because I got better. I got better at it. Did I like sitting down and writing? Did I say, oh boy, I can't wait today. I'm going to devote 2 hours to sitting at the kitchen table, sipping coffee and writing. Did I like that? Absolutely not. Be so much easier to go over and read a novel, even to mow the lawn. That's mindless. Writing's hard. To this day, it's something I have to discipline myself to do. But I like the end product. I like looking at the end of it and go, yeah, I wrote that. That's okay. So this idea that if you have a child write an essay because of their disrespect, or whatever it might be, and by the way, not just one, have it be a house rule. Disrespect leads to an essay. Certain amount of length, that's your decision as a parent. You're not going to turn them off toward writing. What you may do is you make them get a little skilled at this. And I wanted to save all my son's essays, put them in a binder, and give them to his wife on their wedding day. Hey, might want some insights into Andrew. Got this for you. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call. You want to weigh in on this writing thing? Go ahead, because I got more to say about it. But I'd love to hear from you. We got some lines open. Give me a call.
I don't think we've replaced our siding since we moved in 20 years ago. But I'm sure it's still fine, right?
Better call Mighty Dog Roofing of Ann Arbor.
Damaged siding can cause mold buildup and weaken your home structure. Protect your family by calling local Catholics Dan and Mary Flanagan at Mighty Dog Roofing for a free inspection of your siding, roof, or windows. Mighty Dog Roofing, 734-224-4916. That's 734-224-4916.
I was a teenager watching my mom and grandmother and aunts play cards. My grandmother looked at me as I served tea, and she asked me in her native tongue, spoken Chaldean, "Whose daughter are you?" She knew I was a granddaughter, but she didn't remember who my parents were. It was the first sign we knew my grandmother was suffering memory loss. Nearly 15 years followed a slow decline as Alzheimer's stole her memories. A few years after that first incident, she was watching a movie and told me it was Ben-Hur. I knew it wasn't. I tried to explain that to her, but she insisted. I called my mom on the phone to explain to my grandmother that what she was watching was not Ben-Hur. My mom replied, "Vanessa, is Charlton Heston in the movie?" I said, "Yes." Then to my mom, "It's Ben-Hur." What my grandmother loved more than movies was her faith, Jesus Christ. We communicate memories to remind us that even when the body dies, the spirit lives on. This has been a Christ Center communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist and host of Epiphany.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Oh, I like that music, Andrew. Nice.
877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. Question about something in your life, kid, job, circumstances. I can't do any therapy here. I'm not going to diagnose you. But what we do is put our heads together, see if we can come up with a notion or something. A ripple effect, I like to call it. Maybe you change one little thing in your existence and it ripples out. Does a lot of things. It makes major differences from minor moves. 877-57-EQUAL. Sam didn't want to stay on the air, and it's a ticklish question. He said, ever since the George Floyd situation, he thinks he's started to become more prejudiced. With all the Black Lives Matter things, and it seems for him anyway, so much about all this being high profile, He's feeling prejudice where he might not have been. He wants to get over it. First of all, Sam, you don't pair it with skin color. You don't pair it with pigment. You pair it with social movements. If there are social movements that are more likely to happen, then it is because somehow, some way, groups of people have decided to think along the same lines. Whether it's good, whether it's bad. It happens. I have three of my adopted children are black. When we were going through the process, two of the children we adopted from foster care, we didn't foster, but we received them from Children's Services. And my son was adopted from a situation down in Columbus, where he was in intensive care, neonatal intensive care unit. I remember at the time speaking with certain social workers, folks, a couple of times even in interviews, where they said, how will you keep their black culture alive? And I asked back, because that's what psychologists do, we ask back, I said, what do you mean by black culture? What are you talking about? Now, two of my children came from a very, very rough background. Very rough. How do I keep that alive? What exactly is it that I am to keep alive? Well, you need to read books that show them that people of color have accomplished things. And I said, you mean I'm going to say to my children, look, here's somebody with dark skin that did really good. I said, what does skin have to do with anything at all? And then the one said, well, hair, you have to worry about doing her hair. And I said, well, I certainly will. I may have to learn that because her hair will be handled differently. But that's culture. After we were done talking, she didn't really have an answer for me. I said, in a way, I kind of got her upset. I said, well, their culture is going to be my culture. She said, they're going to go to church with me. They're going to live in my home. These are my children. I'm not going to look at them because their pigment is a little heavier than mine and then say somehow that puts into motion a whole bunch of things I have to do differently. Wasn't it Martin Luther King who said he wished for a colorblind society? What is more colorblind than saying, hey, these are my kids? That I don't have to look at this and say, well, I've got to raise them somewhat differently because they've got pigment.
That just made absolutely no sense to me. But it sensed her. I remember this was a woman that had interviewed me on a show. And she just didn't like this at all. She thought I was forcing my white culture, whatever that was, upon my black children. I said to my son, who probably, the irony too, I have a black son who probably thinks more like me than any of the kids. And it's interesting because I know some people might say, look what you did, you ruined him. Well, that could be, but I think I would have ruined him either way. But he said to me one time, he said, Dad, make any difference to you? I said, what? How would it? I said, the only difference between you and I is that you're a little darker than I am, and in the summertime, I'm Italian, and I get pretty dark. I said, but if you're going to go by looks, I look a lot less like your sisters than I do like you. And I remember that cliche was just so dominant in our adopting. And fortunately, I think it's breaking down. But I think what Sam was struggling with in his question, and I think perhaps he just decided he didn't want to go on the air with it. What he was struggling with is that the culture is doing to him what some of the adoption workers did to me, which is that this particular group, and it's not even, I hesitate to use the word black community or gay community or Hispanic community or Catholic community. I hesitate black community in the sense that all people within the, I don't even know how you would, within the, with the darker skin color live the same way. How is that? There's a certain inner city kind of behavior. There's a certain middle class kind of behavior. There's a certain professional kind of behavior. Some are religious. Some are not religious. How do you clump everybody into one big community and say that is the identifying feature of every person in that community? That's ridiculous. Am I going to say the psychological community? Because in a lot of ways, I don't think like my colleagues do. So is there a psychological community that you can refer me to? No, it's a wide diversity of thinking. So I would imagine there, Sam, that's one of the things that you've been struggling with, that whole idea of, okay. But you know, it's interesting, just a little bit of an aside. For years and years and years and years, we played basketball. All of us, white guys, black guys, we all just played. We were all buddies, played ball, nothing, no problem, nothing. Except when you fouled me, gone to the lane, and then, okay. But toward the end, with the heavy hammering of the media and this idea that whites as a group mistreat blacks, the guys started turning on us. Guys that were formerly friendly, and we just all played together. It was no big deal. It was nothing. There was nothing there. We were all guys playing basketball. Some of them stopped paying. Some of them started making racial jibes toward us. It's like, what? How'd this happen? It shows you the power of the media to shape thinking. 877-57-EQUAL. Dr. Ray, I want to hear from you. Thanks for calling. Thank you so much for joining me. Dr. Greg Reddy here, broadcasting from North Platte, Nebraska, here in St. Patrick Parish. Thank you, Father Sorensen, for giving us your facilities. Tonight, I'm heading over, going to get in the car, and drive to Hastings, Nebraska, St. Michael's. So if you're listening on the KVSS Network, Spirit Catholic Radio. Come on over. We have gotten more folks there than we thought. A lot of people walked in. So that was kind of cool. Had very nice get-togethers with the folks. Tonight, be talking about men, women, excuse the gender, assuming, and marriage. It's interesting, speaking of men, women, I was looking up some stuff, working on a book on anxiety, and I was looking up some stuff on the frequency of certain type of anxiety reactions across the sexes. And that's true. If you look at the prevalence, the coincidence of certain diagnostic categories across the sexes, it varies. It very much varies. Now, the argument is, of course, well, that's because we socialize men and women very differently. It's not true necessarily. There are differences in some places. For example, ADHD is more common among males and females, and speech problems more common among males and females, and there's a neurological basis to some of this stuff. So, I looked this up. Cleveland Clinic website. Now, Cleveland Clinic is considered, and it comes about 50 miles north of me, and when I had my operation just recently, it was through a Cleveland Clinic affiliate. They are probably, some would argue, the best heart hospital in the world. You get people coming from all over. Cleveland Clinic, you know, cutting edge medical science. So I looked up the frequency. I forget what I was, I think it was one of the anxiety subtypes. The first thing that struck me on their site. These disorders are more common among those assigned female at birth than among those assigned male at birth. The juxtaposition of Cleveland Clinic as the cutting edge medical facility in the country, in the world, saying that whether you looked at a newborn baby and you really couldn't tell, I mean, whether it's male or female, you know, there's ways, but I guess not, you can't do that anymore. They assigned. They said, well, I'm going to assign you this. Now, the argument, of course, is, well, yeah, that's what they were assigned because physiologically, physically, that's exactly what they look like. That was their sex. But who knows how they'll evolve in their lifetime. And they might decide that they are no longer of that sex anymore. But I thought it was fascinating. This elite medical center, using the language that the culture says to use. I was reading an article just recently, fascinating article. One of the things the article pointed out was that, unfortunately, some of the sciences, medicine, biology, some of the, what you considered hardcore sciences were being influenced, if not completely shaped, by the common cultural narrative. And I think that website is a classic example of that. 877-573-7825. We're at the bottom of the hour. Let me look at this here, see what we're doing. Yeah, we're getting close to the bottom of the hour. And we have openings here. If you want to call in, this is very unusual. This doesn't happen too often. So many people email me and 877-573-7825. I only got about a couple minutes before I go to a hard break, so let me just bring up a couple more points about writing as punishment. There was a woman named Nell who listened to me early on when I began this program. She's from Poland, and she was getting her PhD in one of the writing professions. And you could tell it. I would get her emails, and they were, oh, man, they were, in and of themselves, I should have kept them because I could have made books out of them. They were so articulate. She said she had an experience in one of her classes where the professor said, you are all pursuing careers variously in writing, the writing profession. Therefore, now this is graduate school level, therefore, I am not going to assign writing. You will write if you wish. I will suggest potential topics, but it will not affect your grade. And Nell said they were all rather pleased at this. They were being treated as grown-ups. They were people that were heading into writing. I mean, this is what they're going to do for their life, you know, their livelihood. All excited. She made the observation that as they moved through the course, what they found was less and less assignments were being turned in. These are writers now. These were people who were going to be professional writers. This is a career. And when they were told, we're not going to babysit you. We're not going to make you write. You don't have to if you don't want to. Like a three-year-old. If I don't want to, I don't have to. You're not the boss of me. They basically stopped. How do you account for that? I think it essentially says writing is one of those things that you have to be disciplined into doing, oftentimes by somebody else. The people at Sophia and EWTN who have published my most recent books, I tease them. Because I say they nag me. Well, you're going to nag me. I'm not even going to tell you I'm working on a book because you're going to start nagging me. You're going to say it's got to be done. Do you want me to have it? Can you give us a deadline? Nagging me about this. And I figure, okay, well, I better sit down and start pushing myself a little further on this to get it to them. Because if I don't, well, it's easier just to go mow the lawn. You know? I can see that immediately. The lines are pretty straight, you know. Get to your calls here. 877-573-7825. Want to talk to you? Enjoy your company. Okay, the calls are coming in. Thank you so much. B is calling from Colorado. Hi, B.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for the call.
You're welcome. I was just listening to you at the beginning of the show about racism, and I just had a little story about my son. He was 5 years old. We have a neighbor across the street who adopted from China, and I was around the kitchen table talking to a friend of mine about this neighbor's daughter, and all of a sudden my son's like, and I was telling my friend about her being from China adopted, and he just piped in and said, Mommy's not from China, I've known her all my life. It was just kind of cute because he had no thought of her being from China or being different. It's just something that you're taught, you know, racism. Because, you know, he did know her all his life, and she just was like, you know, him, you know. It was just so cute.
Yeah, wouldn't you like to have that kind of kid color blindness?
Yes.
I've wrestled with this, B, as a psychologist. But human beings are tribal. They're very, very tribal. Mm. And I've wrestled with how is it that if you look at human history, people who look differently than you are variously shunted, outcast, attacked, fought, subverted, put down, put into slavery. It has amazed me. Even now, that's a phenomenon that just sort of... in a lot of ways is still there, which is you look differently than me. So therefore, that's one of the absolute great things brought about by Christianity, which is no, this is not of any relevance whatsoever, because the main thing, if you want to choose a community, we're children of God. That's our community. I know when we went with the kids, we had 3 white, 2 Hispanic, 2 biracial, and 3 black. And when the kids were little, they were all under 12 at one point. I mean, can you imagine what it looked like? It's like, what the heck is this? Some kind of preschool probation program? What is this? And the kids that they played with, it didn't make one whole whit of difference whatsoever. But it was the grown-ups. One time my wife was in line at an amusement park. Kids were all trailing behind her. And the lady at the ticket booth said, and she saw the kids, she saw the different colors, and she said, I wonder what their real mother's thinking right now. And my wife said, well, their real mother would like 10 tickets for this ride. So, it's fascinating. And it's ironic, too, because my black son, who's 28 now, he has had to push back on people who say things like, well, what was it like being raised by white people? And my son just looked at him like, what are you, an idiot? That's my dad. That's my mom. They couldn't love me more than they do, and I couldn't love them more than I do. What are you talking about? But it frustrates him because he hears that kind of nonsense. Mm. And he's even had times where the implication was that somehow he was shortchanged by being raised in a white household, which really wasn't a white household because he had black brothers and sisters and biracial brothers and sisters. And I know, my dear. You're right. It's a beautiful story. Thank you. Thank you for the call, honey. Appreciate it. All right, let me see if I got time to take some more. I do. Oh, let's see. Let me, is Lenore ready? Not yet. Okay, let's go to Dina then. Hi, Dina.
Hi.
Well, you know, I never got a question like this 15 years ago, Dina. I never got a question like this ever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I wanted to first make a quick comment about the writing. I used to make my youngest kid, who was always very disrespectful, I used to make him do things like write the definition of disrespect, you know, write an apology, why it's important and stuff like that. And it helped him a little bit. He still struggles. But it also helped my older son kind of see what he's doing and why it's important in our conversations we would have after the writing. Because then as Logan got a little bit older in teen years, my other son's like, hey, don't do that. You're being disrespectful to mom. Like, he was like, oh, I see it. And he's then like trying. So even if you're just doing it to one kid who's, you know, having like, sometimes it can help, you know, affect the other people around your house too. They can see the benefits of it.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of discipline by osmosis. I don't want to write those essays. I don't want to define respect. You're a dummy for doing that. I'm not doing it.
Yeah. And
that's
then
what's one good thing about having a tough kid. The other kids learn from him.
Yeah. My other thing is like recently my kid decided to tell me, you know, he's transgender and do I support him? And I'm like, well, I love you and I will always love you no matter what, but what do you mean by support? And he's like, well, you're going to give me hormone replacement stuff. And I was like, no. And he's like, why not? And I'm all, because you're 14 and you have a whole life of figuring out who you are and doing that now, but we have no idea what the long-term effects would be. Like, you could change your mind. You've changed your mind how many times in the last couple of years about what you want to be when you grow up? I'm like, you're still figuring that out. And so, you know, of course now I'm hateful and whatever. So it's a very hard thing to navigate, and I know it's like it's all over in social media, and I've cut back on all that stuff where I'm long before this, but also,
where do you think
like,
he's getting this idea, Lenore? Where do you think he's getting this idea?
I think he's getting it from Well, it's in the schools. It's big in the schools, just in general. And then I believe some of it's from the social media stuff, and it's in TV shows. You know, I got to really, you know, like, it's in a show you wouldn't even think it's in. And you're just like, whoa, you know, like, okay, stop. You can't watch this anymore, because sometimes the show will start and it doesn't have it, and then all of a sudden they put it in, so somebody sucked into the show, and they're like, oh, you know. So it's like, it's just kind of everywhere. And it's just trying to limit that exposure and be more aware of what's happening.
Your 14-year-old son is telling you he wants to be a girl.
Yes.
Have you said to him, how did you decide this?
I haven't gotten to that conversation yet. This is like literally happened like a week ago. So I'm like, and I know it's taken him a little while to feel comfortable enough to tell me. So I'm like trying to take it a little bit at a time. So I'm like trying to I'm trying to think about what I say so I can kind of have some answers that, you know, I can come across as loving and not like, I'm just being racist or, you know, whatever, like trying to find that balance where he's not going to just automatically reject everything I say because he's assuming I believe something differently. So I've been trying to really think about it, like questions I should ask and how I should go with it. But
well, I think you're on stable ground. There is indications that most kids, as they move through the teen years and adolescence, especially even the girls, come back to their original, quote unquote, assigned sex.
Right.
So they do. Yeah. So there's a certain period of confusion. And I'm telling you, as a psychologist, and I wish more of my profession would speak up, because there is such a huge social influence component to this. And I'm not hearing it. I mean, yeah, here and there you hear voices saying, yeah, it's a social norming, social contagion. But it's so big. And we look at these kids like your son's age, and your instincts sound wonderful, which are, you're influenced by a whole bunch of things, son, and you change your mind all over the place. But stuff like this, which we assume is their identity, we think is automatically invariable. That's it. Can't change. So if he says he is, then you better accept that he is. Even though, even though 20 years ago, you never almost heard of this.
Right.
And it cannot be accounted for by the idea that, well, no, our culture's more accepting. And now, and all these folks who would struggle with this. Well, with that thinking in line here, Lenore, I've seen surveys where people over 55 and 60 almost never say they are trans now.
Yeah.
It is a phenomenon very much attached to girls, more commonly on the autistic spectrum, and adolescents. So you're right. Given this, you're well within your parental rights to say, no, we're not going to pursue dramatic approaches. We're not going to do hormonal replacement. We're going to do any of this. You can do that as a parent. Although there are corners of our society that would look at you and say that you're quasi abusive.
Yeah.
For doing that.
I guess my biggest concern is like, because he's been in therapy recently for other things, depression and stuff. It's like finding somebody that isn't just going to sit there and like, okay, yeah, let's go with it. And, you know, like finding somebody who's like, okay, why? And like asking the questions and, you know, and that part is really scary, is like finding those people. Because like he was recently in a mental health unit, and about half the people in there had, you know, the pride shirts and the, you know, pins and all that stuff, just wearing it. So it's like, that's scary too. It's like trying to navigate just that as well. So,
well, here's the other thing. Then this is, you put your finger on it, which is oftentimes among this kind of gender confusion, there are a lot of other emotional issues.
Right.
And there is a sense of, well, I'm trying to find peace. I'm trying to find some way to feel stable in my existence. And in fact, that's right. I'm going to maybe it is my sexual orientation. Maybe it is I'm in a mixed up situation. Yeah, I know, my dear. All right, Lenore, I think you've got some good direction with this. Oh, I'm sorry. Was that Dina? Oh gosh. Okay. Forget that. I called that twice. Dina, God bless you, dear. I'll talk to you. This is Dr. Ray.
The Encounter School of Ministry is offering a power-packed four-day event, allowing you to experience a taste of the School of Ministry. The Summer Intensive offers foundational teaching in the spiritual gifts, including kingdom identity, healing, prophecy, and inner healing, all drawing from the richness of our Catholic heritage, and taught by Father Matthias Phelan, Patrick Rice, and more. The Encounter School of Ministry Main Campus Summer Intensive, evenings June 23rd to 26th at St. Patrick Parish in Brighton, Michigan. Visit EncounterCatholic.com to learn more. EncounterCatholic.com.
Ron Finn here, inviting you to join Dave Basheris, Pat Odie Murray, and me for Morning Offering, the Catholic way to start your day.
We welcome some very special guests each day, including Teresa Tamio, Andrew Reinhardt, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and Matthew Archbold. Plus, my chat with Pat, talking with Catholic experts from all over.
Plus, we're having fun along the way, so you can start your day with a smile. Morning Offering, weekday mornings at 8, here on the Ave Maria Radio family of stations.
This week on Christ is the Answer, Father John talks about marriage. In our culture today, there are many people who think, what's the point of marriage? Most of them end in divorce, so why should I bind myself to someone I could fall out of love with? Join us this week as Father John dives deep into the sacrificial nature of marriage from Ephesians 5, as well as expounding on the forgotten significance of fatherhood. Tune in for Christ is the Answer, Monday through Fridays at 11 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
We are the pro-life generation, passionate about building the culture of life in our healthcare and in our nation. But not all healthcare options are equally pro-life, and some provide morally objectionable procedures. CMF Curo is different. CMF Curo is a pro-life Catholic healthcare ministry providing a pathway for its members to build the culture of life in their healthcare choices, not destroy it. Learn more about CMF Curo at MyCatholicHealthcare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Again, good Lord permitting tonight. Seven o'clock, Hastings, Nebraska, tonight. Lynn from Red Hook, New York. Hi, Lynn. Oh, I'm sorry, Lenore. I can see that. Get your glasses on, Raymond. Lenore. Hi, Lenore.
Hi.
There was a cute girl. Wait, I got to tell you. There was this cute girl when I was in high school. And I used to call her Lenore Baby. And she would call me Ray Baby. I remember Lenore. Sweet girl. Okay. How can I help you there, dear?
Well, actually, I just have a comment about the adoption. My daughter is from Korea. She's 34 now. But there was a lot of pressure when we adopted her 5 months to raise her with the Korean culture. And we did that for maybe a couple of months. So we attended various things that the adoption agency was doing. And then we decided we were not comfortable with that. Our instincts told us to raise her with our culture, which is Italian, American, whatever. And I also have a biological son, and all her cousins were biological. So we said, why would we make her feel different than everyone else? You know,
so good. So good.
Yeah. And so she grew up, you know, she's Italian as far as she's concerned. The problems came in school when the teachers would say, okay, we're going to do an assignment on your ancestry. And so immediately she would be, okay, I'm going to do my Italian ancestry. But then one time the teacher took her aside and said, you can do it on Korean or Italian ancestry if you'd like.
And yeah, in other words, if your parents are polluting the way you look at life, I'm here to help you out. But I know, we got that too. This was your daughter.
Totally
nothing
confused.
Could be. Yes, of course. Nothing could be more deep than your attachment to your daughter. Doesn't matter mm-hmm. she was from Korea. That has nothing to do with it.
Right.
Furthermore, you didn't even know what her culture was because you didn't know what social strata she came from in Korea.
Yes, and I often say to people, if I adopted a child from Texas, would you ask that child to talk about the culture in Texas? Of course not, because they know nothing about Texas, you know, growing up in New Jersey or New York. So it just makes no sense to me. Just because her outer person looks like, you know, Korean, you know, I mean, obviously people just are they're not educated on the subject, and even the ones who know that she's adopted, like when she was in high school, they
Were doing. Well, we have to let you go, dear, because I got about 10 seconds. But you're right, a lot of bad ideas run our culture. This is Dr. Ray from Nebraska. Hopefully to see you tonight in Hastings, St. Michael's. Walk with God. All the way to Hastings.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.